Anyone? Atim, what do you got? What are we up to?
Pesek Vav.
So basically, we saw from Perek Dalet Pasuk Yudzayin through Perek Hey Pasuk Vav the response of the speaker we called. Anyone remember what we called him?
Socialist.
Excuse me.
Socialist.
No, that was Perek Dalet. That was Perek Dalet. The Yirei Elokim. The Yirei Elokim was giving a warning. Watch where you step. Watch where you go. Watch what you do. Watch what you offer. Watch the commitments you make. And why should we watch all these things? Because God is in the sky and we're on the ground and we don't know what we're talking about. And we have all these dreams and we say all these things, but we think we know more than we really know. And in the second part, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, right, he was saying, don't make commitments. Even if you end up paying, there's a problem in making the commitment because it seems to express control, a sense of control over the situation. Don't let your mouth, cause yourself to sin. Don't say in front of the Malach that it's a mistake. Why should God get angry at what you say and sabotage your efforts? Keep a rov, chalamot, vavalim, tvarim harbe, kiyate elokim, yirah. This is why we call them the Yirei Elokim, right? All a person can really know is the fear of God. And not to think that he knows himself and that he can make plans and commitments based on the knowledge he thinks he has. Now, what we haven't seen yet, what we didn't see last week was, okay, and what does all this mean? So, Tachlis, what's your philosophy on life, besides saying we don't know? So now he starts relating in Pasuk Zayin and on to the issues that were struggled with in the first part of the Sefer. I say first part of the Sefer because if you look ahead to Perek Zayin, you'll see that it begins the second part. How do you know it's the second part of the analysis? It has a big test. Again, the content also bears out, but the big test, I think, is a external expression of the fact that it's a new part of the book. In the first part of the book, we're dealing with certain troubling phenomenon, like, Pasuk Zayin, Im Oshech, Rash V'Gezel, Mishpat V'Tzedek Tireh V'Amdina. Where did he reflect on Oshech? It's a problem. The conjugation of the word, no? Perek Dalet Pasuk Aleph, V'shafti anev ere et kol ha'ashukim, asher na'asim tachat ha'shamesh, v'hinei dimat ha'ashukim, v'ein lehem menachem, u'miyad oshekehem koach, v'ein lehem menachem. Oshek, oppression. If you see the problem of oppression, rush, weakness, poorness, gezel, mishpat v'tzedek, remember the problems he was observing later on in that perek about the lack of justice. Don't be shocked, don't be bewildered by it. Ki gavoa me'al gavoa shomer u'gvoim aleihem. Because the one, Ari, how you doing?
Good.
Welcome.
Because,
no problem. Ki gavoa me'al gavoa shomer u'gvoim aleihem. Because the one above is watching and he's overseeing and he sees it. What's his answer to these problems? Yeah?
Somebody else is watching.
When I was a kid in the 80s, there were a number of songs that had this element of, it always feels like somebody's watching you. And it was a song? There was a song, Alan Parsons Project, Eye in the Sky. I am the eye in the sky, looking at you. God is up there, we don't have to worry about it. Don't be bewildered. We're bewildered because we wonder, where does justice come from? Don't worry. So at first glance, this philosophy, the Yirei Elokim, we're not finished yet, sounds a lot like... Sorry? The Perek Gimel guy, the hedonist. Because hedonist also said, right? God, he takes care of everything, our job is to enjoy. What did the hedonist say in Perek Gimel? Our job is to enjoy only. We have no responsibilities, right? This is where the Yirei Elokim is different from the hedonist. Perek Pasuk Chet. V'yitron eretz bakolhi. So even before we read the rest of Pasuk Chet, we notice right away that this speaker believes there's a yitron. He believes there is something to be gained. V'yitron eretz bakolhi melech l'saden evad. Now this conjugation is hard initially to understand. What is the yitron? Where is the Yirei Elokim different more than just the regular hedonist? I think the answer comes from understanding the words correctly. The Yirei Elokim believes that there's a responsibility to work. A avodah. When we can use the hackneyed, misunderstood phrase of Torah va'avodah. What's the difference between, what word was used up to this point in the Sefer to mean work? What Hebrew word? Amal, right? What's the difference between amelut and avodah? Between an amal and oved?
Oved seems like it's productive.
Productive. Amelut means toil. That's how it's translated into English. It means work for nothing. I'll give you an example. We say in the Haggadah, Vayar Hashem et amaleinu vet lachatzenu. It's a pasuk in the Torah. How does Haggadah translate amaleinu? Vet amaleinu elu habanim. Why are banim considered amaleinu? So my father has three sons. He always likes to say, Vet amaleinu elu habanim. Oh, how true that is. How true that is. You know, in the self-pity, you know, mode, you know, oh, having sons. But what does it mean, Haggadah? It doesn't mean his sons gave him a hard time. What does it mean?
They had sons and they didn't come to anything because they were killed.
Because they were killed. That's work for nothing, right? And up to this point, he sees all work as leading nowhere. Suddenly there's a shift and he's describing work as avodah. Why does it matter? Why does it count? Because it's avodah for the melech. Who's the melech, of course? Who?
God.
Hashem. And this is a very delicate and difficult to strike balance. And let me explain what it means. People have an easy time, relatively easy time functioning in one of two extreme types of systems. One system is, I'm in charge, the results depend on my actions, I'm going to work as hard as I can so that I can get the most out of it. Okay, so then I know the results depend on my actions. I'm going to keep working hard. I'm going to work till 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to get up early. I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to think about it over Shabbos because it depends on my actions, right? People understand that. What if we tell someone it's not up to you and you don't determine? How does the average person who works in a company where they don't matter, nobody cares, they're not judged in any way, their actions have no implications, how do they work? They don't. You had to have gone to the old Soviet Union to see this. In the old Soviet Union, everybody had a job. There's no such thing as unemployment. And very few people had the promise of getting anywhere in their job. It wasn't like if you were a good worker, like in a capitalist system, you want to be a good worker because you want to get a promotion, you want to get a raise, you want to get a higher position. So you would go and see people like on strike in their job. What I mean on strike is they would do nothing. I remember you go to a museum. So you go to America to a museum, right? So you have people whose job is to stand and watch and come around. Don't, please, sir, don't go too close to the painting, right? Or, you know, please watch your step here. Or whatever their job is to say. Proactive. You go to a museum. I remember going to the Hermitage in Leningrad. That's the big museum. And you walk in, there's a woman sitting like this. You go like this, like Buckingham Palace, right? That's it. And you're wondering, is it like, you know, Madame Tussauds? Is it, you know, is it a plastic woman? Is it a real woman? Every few minutes. It's not up to her. She doesn't determine the result. Why should she work hard? Why should she care? That's the other extreme that the hedonist was going to. The hedonist is saying, it's not our world. We don't determine anything, so we should enjoy whatever we can. But he's saying something in between. What's he saying? He's saying, where you're Elohim. We believe that in the end, the result depends on God. Finished. Where does that put us? We have a job. Our job is to? What? Is to do our avodah. Whatever our avodah is. That's a very hard balance to strike. And of course, if you're looking for a source for this philosophy in the Torah, in Judaism, you have it very clearly. God creates this whole self-sufficient world in Gan Eden, and then creates man and tells him, then I'm putting you here in Gan Eden. Le'ovdahu l'shamra. You have to work. What do you mean I have to work? God, you created the whole world. Everything has its own mist. And what is it? No man has a responsibility to work. Meaning, now again, you can talk about avodat Hashem, which is it, melech l'sadeh ne'evad, right? Not in the narrow sense of learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. But whatever one does in this world, planting a field, which is what most people used to do, or whatever it is, we see ourselves as doing, as fulfilling our responsibility for what God put us in the world to do. Now, do we determine how it's going to come in the end? Are we responsible to bring justice? Do we have to fix all the problems? Do we have to come up with fancy philosophies to figure out how the world ought to work? Not only do we not, we can't. And we should be cautious of thinking that we have it all figured out. That was the beginning of Perek Vav. But that doesn't mean we don't work. And that doesn't mean there isn't a Yitron. The Yitron is, we do our work. Now before we take questions about this, I just want you to see how he talks about the implications of living this way. He contrasts now two types of workers. One worker is the one who works for the benefit that he hopes to gain. And he thinks that the amount of benefit he gains depends on how much work he puts in. Pasuk Tet. Oev kesef, lo yispa kesef. A person who works for money, because he loves money, will never be satisfied by the money he has. Remember, we saw this in Perek Dalet. Because if you see the yitron in what you gain, no matter how much you have, you'll always want more. Pasuk Yud, birvot hatova rabu ochleha. The more good there'll be, the more consumers there'll be, the more eaters there'll be. From an economics perspective, there's a theory, and I forget who said it, anyone who happens to study economics can let me know, that as the resources increase arithmetically, the consumers increase geometrically. The implication of that was that we're living in a world that's developed tremendously from the industrial perspective, right? So much more created, so much more available, but also so many more who want what's available. And so even as more becomes available, there still isn't enough. And he's speaking about it here in a much more personal, local sense. Birvota tova rabu ochleha. The more good there is, the more people want from it. In contrast, now Pasuk Yudalev, mitukash nata oved. Sweet is the sleep of the worker. Ha'oved. Im ma'at v'im harbe yochel. He has a lot, he has a little, he eats and he enjoys. V'hasava, while the plenty le'ashir to the rich one, einenu meniach lo lishon. Keeps him from sleeping. What's he saying here? If we really believed that God determined what happened in the world, if we really believe that, right? We have a job to work, what we might call arishtatlus, right? But the end depends on God. So a person would have a responsibility to work a full day, work the best they could. But they wouldn't be scared, and they wouldn't be worried, and they wouldn't pain themselves over how little they had, how much they had. They wouldn't be afraid of the implications. They wouldn't go to sleep, stay up till 3 in the morning working because they're afraid it's not going to turn out right, because in the end, the result depends on God. I just have to put in my work. You'd be able to sleep comfortably all year, right? Of course, you wouldn't sleep on Rosh Hashanah. Right? That's where that comes from. Because that's when things go down. But the rest of the year you could sleep comfortably. While the person who has a lot can't sleep because he believes that what he has depends on himself. So he's constantly worried. He's got to keep maintaining. He's got to keep a watch over. He's got to keep guard. He's got to worry. What's going to be? What's going to be? So the Yirei Elokim has a philosophy where he says, we don't know enough to truly be able to formulate and apply philosophies of life of how the world ought to work. But we believe it does work. We believe that God takes care of that part. And as opposed to the hedonist who says, therefore we have no responsibilities, the Yirei Elokim says our responsibilities to put in our day's work. And he tries to sell it to you by saying, this is the way you can live happily ever after. Now the truth is, I think there are many religious people who live this way. And they have a calm, an inner calm, and peace with themselves, genuinely believing that God is taking care of it, and that at the end there'll be justice, and they'll get their due, and they're not responsible for making sure that they make $1 million, because on Rosh Hashanah, right? Rosh Hashanah, it's set how much we make. So it's already set. If you really believe that, could you imagine how calm life would be? How many of the people who are nervous on a day-to-day basis really believe that God set their salary on Rosh Hashanah? Again, can we believe this? We can't believe this. It's a separate question, which we're about to get to. But we can see what the positive potential of such a belief would be. Yeah.
But that's good. Why do I have to do anything? Because once Rosh Hashanah,
that's your job.
Rosh Hashanah was already decided, awesome. So whether I do it or not.
That the Gemara already says, right? It's if you're doing your work, right? If a person decides they're not going to work, they're not going to make anything, right? We have a responsibility to do our work. What your work will result in, that's been decided. It could be we don't want to believe it. Could be we can't believe it. Could be it's unrealistic. But that's what he's talking about, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. For those who don't like religion, we're about to see him rip it apart. So, you know, hang in there. Yes.
Shouldn't the worker still be caught up in the fact that he has to do his work?
He should be caught up in being committed to his work.
So, that keeps him sleeping?
Why do people not sleep at night? Not because, oh my God, I have to go to work tomorrow. Nobody's afraid of going to work. they don't sleep at night because they're worried. My boss, the competition, will it grow? Let's say you're a farmer. Will it rain? Will there be sunlight? That's God's problem. You can see it's a very enticing philosophy. Now let's see why he rips it apart. What's interesting is the last part of the first part of the Kohelet, the end of Perek Hei and Perek Vav, begin the same way. Let's look at Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Bet. Yesh ra'ah chola ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh. Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. Yesh ra'ah sh'ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh. V'rabahi al ha'adam. So the first ra'ah is a sickening bad thing, right? A sickness in the world. The second thing is more than sick. It's too much for a man to handle. Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. Yesh ra'ah sh'ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh. V'rabahi al ha'adam. It's too much for man. What's worse than sick? Death. And that's what he's getting to in Perek Vav. The first stage is, you know, the patient is sick, and the second stage, the patient is dead. And we'll see why the problems he raises here in the end of Perek Hei and Perek Vav nullify not only the philosophy of the Yirei Elokim in the beginning of Perek Hei, but all the philosophies that were presented as a whole in the first part of the book. The hedonist, the socialist, and the Yirei Elokim. And really, the end of part one is where he gets to a terrible low point, where nothing seems to make sense. So the good news is we're going to end here today with nothing making sense. But it's going to take us some time to explain why nothing makes sense. Okay, let's see. Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Bet. Yesh ra'ah chola ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh. Osher shamur leve'alav lirato. What's the first problem that we see? Everyone, you may have forgotten that I give Kohelet shir today. So can I call you back after the shir? Okay, bye-bye. He totally forgot. Because, you know, after the fifth time of him ringing, I just feel bad. Tzar, you know, Tzar Bale Chaim. Everyone should have to keep calling. And I didn't should have to keep looking at it. There's a ra'ah chola that I saw under the... I wonder why I didn't leave my phone on. Because a husband, a father needs to always be available. My child calls, I answer the phone. Or if one. Yesh ra'ah chola ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh. There's a sick, bad thing in the world. And what is it? What is the sick, bad thing? Osher shamur levi'alav lerato. A person's wealth can be watched by him, protected by him. You can look home with someone if you want. Yaakov, I want to give him, you can share together Tanakh. I feel bad. Osher shamur levi'alav lerato. A person's wealth can be guarded by him, by its owner, in a bad way. How could your wealth be guarded in a bad way? Let's see. Ve'avad ha'osher ahu bi'inyan ra. As much as you guard it, what can happen to it? You can lose it. The holid bain, the ain biado meuma. You have a son and you have nothing to give him. Okay, well, this is a sad thing. You know, can understand why this is heart-wrenching. We'll have to see why it relates to the philosophy that came before. Kasher yatsa mi betenimo. In this kind of circumstance where a person works hard, makes a lot of money, and then loses it all. Think about it. A few years ago, people really had this scenario. Think about the frustration. And in the end, the way he left his mother's womb, a robe, naked, yashuv lalechet kishaba, is how he returns the way he came. Umi'uma lo yisav amalo shiolech biado. And what does he have to show for all of his efforts? What's mu'uma? Nothing. That's a sad situation, right? We can talk about a person who works hard, he makes money, loses it all. Okay. But now he takes it a step further. This is another sick, bad thing. Kol umat sheba ken yelech. How is this a step beyond what we saw in Yud Bet through Yud Daled? What's he claiming now? Everyone leaves that way. Umay yitron lo sheyam ol ruach. What does he gain for working for by working for nothing? Gam kol yamav b'choshech yochel. All his days he eats in darkness. Why would a person eat in darkness in the old days?
He gets home after dark.
Let's say you work really hard. You don't get home in time, right? Like today, we don't know what that means. Imagine the old days, you work hard, you get home, it's dark. So how do you eat? Whatever's there, right? What'd you say? You light a fire. Hey, maybe you have one. Maybe you light it and still, you know, it's not... You know, there was a blackout in a lunch foot 2 weeks ago. So we lit a fire. You know, it's not the same. Just to let you know. There was a little light. Like, I could see. I didn't bang into the table. But I couldn't learn. you know, couldn't enjoy anything the same way I'm used to doing it. And believe it or not, I couldn't use the computer. You know, we forget, like, how, you know. Okay, I'll wait. I can't do that. Wait, I'll. Well, I can't do that either. It's amazing how, you know, how addicted we've become. But in any case, the point is, he eats in darkness. V'kas harbei v'chalyo v'katzef. His life is full of difficulties, sickness, frustration. Hine ani ra'iti ani tov asher yafeh lechol v'lishtot v'lerot tova b'chol amalo shi'amol tachat ha'shemesh mispar yimei chayav asher natan olokim ki hu chelko. What's the problem he's talking about here? Why is it that everybody goes that way? He started off, we understood what he was talking about in Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet. A situation where a person makes a lot of money, but then loses it all. Okay, why is everyone that way? Because you can't take it with you, right? Think about how desperately human beings have tried to take it with them. What is the Pharaoh thinking when he has himself buried with all of his gold and wives? What are the chances that they're going to actually be with me in the next world? I mean, they weren't stupid people, right? But if I can't take them with me, what is it all worth? This desperate attempt to take it with me. They tell a joke about a story. I ruined it, right? They tell a story about a guy who dies. He's about to die, and he has a lot of money, and he wants to take it with him. So he calls in a priest, a rabbi, and an imam. And he says, look, I want to take money with me. I'm giving you each $1,000,000. Take whatever your meiser, whatever your tzedakah is for yourself. But on the day I die, I want you to come and put the rest of the money in my casket. Okay. Guy dies. Funeral comes. Three of them show up. Each one with an envelope. They go over. They put it in. A few months later, the three of them meet together at a religious dialogue conference. And they ask each other, "New, what did you do?" So the Christian says, look, by us it's 10%. I took 10% for the church. I put in $900,000. Okay, very nice. Then the imam, what did you do? He goes, by us it's 20%. I put in, you know, $800,000. And, you know, gave the rest to the mosque. And he said, hey, Rabbi, what about you? He goes, I left a check for $3,000,000 and took your envelopes. Again, if it's being told by a Jew, you know, we have the upper hand. In any case, the point is, you know, we're desperately trying to take it with us, but in the end, nobody can. And therefore, okay, so retreat. Why is this particularly a problem for the Yirei Elokim? Why is this claim about how I don't want to formulate it in a way that you'll see right away. Why is this particularly a problem for the Yirei Elokim? What is the assumption the Yirei Elokim makes in his philosophy? Yeah.
If you believe in God, your work will come easier.
That is an assumption, but I don't think that's the one he's addressing here. Unless you mean it easier in the broader sense. I don't want to get into diukim, you know, force feed you what I'm saying. I mean, the Yirei Elokim is separating between the effort and the result. And what he's saying is man needs to understand that the result, the payoff, that's up to God. You don't know what you're going to get out of it. You may get nothing. Your job is to work. Now, that sounds nice in theory. But basically what you're expecting people to live is a life of, my job is to work, I don't know if I'm going to get anything out of it, I don't know what I'll get out of it, I'll ever see anything from it. People can't work that way. You can't tell people, just work and God or Stalin will decide how much you make. That's why it doesn't work. Now the difference between the socialist and the Yirei Elokim is that the socialist is saying rely on Stalin, and the Yirei Elokim is saying rely on God. Now, if I had to choose, I think I would choose God. But in the end, people can't live their lives being expected to invest without seeing the payoff. And if in the end you have tragic situations of people who invest and build up fortunes and then lose it, and if that's true about everyone, that no matter how much you make, in the end you have nothing to show for it, that's not a way of life. And what's the default he comes back to here in the end of Perek A, as he did in the end of Perek Bet, other places, and we'll keep seeing it? If the philosophies of life don't make sense, what do civilizations come back to, just as they are in our own time? If it doesn't make sense to believe in something higher, then what do I believe in? Enjoying whatever I can while I can. Pasuk Yud-Zayin. Hine asher ra'iti ani tov asher yafeh le'achol v'lishtot v'lerot tova b'chol amalo she'amol tachat ha'shemesh mispar yimei chayav she'natan le'olokim ki'u chalko. I don't know anything beyond this. I can't figure out anything bigger. I'm just going to eat and enjoy whatever I can. Ki gam kol ha'adam asher natan lo elokim osher nechasim whoever God gives richness and property to, v'hishlito le'achol mimenu, and gives him the ability to eat from it, v'laseit et chalko v'lesmoch ma'amalo, zo matat elokimi. This is not the same joyful hedonism of Perek Gimel. Because if it's spoiled in Perek Dalet, we know that most people in the world don't have an enjoyable life. And what he's saying is, whoever happens to have, enjoy what they have, and you should know it's a gift of God, and if you happen to be one of the lucky ones, well, good luck to you. Ki lo harbe yiskoret yimei chayav ki elokim ma'ne b'simchat libo. Not a lot of people are going to remember you, so you might as well enjoy whatever you can. So you see how the hedonism has gotten chopped down, but he's using that as an alternative to the belief in anything higher. Let's now get to stage two. Perek Vav. Yesh ra'a sheraiti tachat ha-shamesh v'rabahi al ha'adam. There's a bad in this world that is too much for man to fight with, to overcome. Ish asher yitain lo ha'elokim osher nechasim v'chavod. A person who God gives, right? We were just talking about the end of Perakei, a person who has osher nechasim, a person who God gives it to, money, possessions, honor, everything a person could hope for. V'einenu chaser l'nafsho mikol asher yitaveh. He lacks nothing. Nothing he could possibly desire. But what's missing? End of Pasuk Bet. He already implied this in Pasuk Yud Chet. If you go back to Pasuk Yud Chet in Perek Hey, when he was talking about a person, the very few who might be able to enjoy this world, what did he say? Gam kol adam shenatan lo elokim o shenachasim vihishlito leachol mimenu. And the control to benefit from it. What's he describing now in Pasuk Bet? A person who has o shenachasim kavod lacks nothing but v'lo yashlitenu elokim leachol mimenu. God doesn't give him the control to benefit from it. Ki ish nachri yochlenu. Instead, a foreign person enjoys it. Zehevel v'chali rahu. First of all, why does he have to add that a foreign person is going to benefit from it? Why can't he just say, the person doesn't get the benefit from it? Psychologically, why does he add that point? Where else do we see it in the Torah? Torah says that if a person built a new home or married a wife or just inaugurated a vineyard, they don't go to war. Why? Because the person who go to war will be afraid that he might die and not get to be with his wife. That's not what the Torah says, right? What does the Torah say? He'll die and someone else will have his wife. What difference does it make to him? I'm dead, no? It doesn't bother him that he may not have his wife. What bothers him? Someone else is going to get her. You look in the Tochah also, it says you're going to plant and someone else will eat the fruits. What should it say? You're going to plant and you won't eat the fruits. No, that's worse. It doesn't seem not to bother us as much that we won't have it. It bothers us more that I should work and someone else should get it. What kind of situation is he talking about here? Where a person has everything but doesn't get the control to use it. What does it mean? Why would he not have the control to use it? What ultimately makes us not in control? What's the ra'ah asherayiti tachat hashamesh, which is rabahi al ha'adam, too much for man. Man can't fight it. Because he was talking about in Perek Hey that a person may have and lose it. So get insurance. Right? Insurance is an expression of our need for control. It's not enough that we have things. We know how fragile we are. And how at any moment we can lose whatever's most dear to us, we get insured. And people who are most neurotic get everything insured. They sell today insurance for everything. You can insure every single thing in your life with the exception of the insurance company. And I assume you could buy insurance for your insurance. Why would anyone do that? Because they're neurotic. Because we seek in Western society security. Protection. Now, of course, Kalmar, the chances of your insurance company flopping and the other insurance company still being around to insure you are very slim. Member FDIC. What? One insurance company fell and the other one's in? That's who your father works in? Reinsuring people? Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. That's probably a big business. Now again, the things that people insure, it's unbelievable. Because we want to be able to go to sleep at night without worries. But there's one thing you can't insure.
Acts of God.
What? Acts of God, right. Now you can insure against an act of God. Sure you can get insurance for that, right, Colmer? Okay.
If
You can even get life insurance, right? You can get life insurance. But there's one thing you can't insure, that you'll be alive to enjoy it. That no insurance company can give you, right? The insurance company can say, if you die, we'll give your inheritors $3 million, $30 million, $1 trillion. But they can't tell you you're going to get to use it, right? Can anyone give you insurance that you are going to get to enjoy the wealth you build up? Kolmar, your father can sell that insurance?
No.
Why not? Because even Kolmar's father doesn't have the keys to life. He's the actuary. He's the actuary. He figures out the percentage and makes sure the insurance company gets a cut. It's higher than the chance of you ever seeing anything. Your father's the Jew behind the scenes. Just clarifying. Okay, look, every company needs a Jew who makes sure that, you know, they're going to Jew out every one of their money. You know, don't ever call my father. All your fathers are the Jew. There's the Jew in the insurance company, the Jew in the law, the Jew in medicine, the Jew behind sports. Everyone's got the Jew. Ultimately, the NBA strike was resolved by the Jews who work for the owners, meeting with the Jews who work for the players, and figuring out some way they could make the NBA season go on, right? Look, even Syracuse had a Jew. Right, the guy just got fired. Fine. Right. Everyone's got their Jew. Getting back to the point. Why is it that we lack control? Because in the end we die. Not in the end we die. When do we die? Whenever God decides to blow the whistle. Now again, you could say too soon, not too soon. The one common denominator is that it's suddenly and without warning. Generally. At least not enough warning. Imagine a situation for a second of a guy who says to himself, look, I know that in order to enjoy life, I need a lot of money. So he has a plan, whether it's law, business, no matter which track. He's going to work like a dog, not enjoy anything, focus fully on getting and becoming a millionaire. Today, a millionaire is nothing. A billionaire, right? And he has a plan that by age 50, he's going to have it and then he's going to enjoy life. What happens if he drops dead at 50? What insurance does he have that he won't drop dead at 50? And this ra'ah is rabahi ala adam. This is something we can't handle. Think of the desperate attempts to take things with us, and the desperate attempts to overcome death. To be able to beat death, the fountain of youth, the great dream. The amazing thing is that people try and live their lives in denial of death because we have no answer for it. No answer we're ready to live with. And so we try to convince ourselves, or we tell ourselves, not logically. If I ask Ari Chizkiah, do you think you're going to die? He's not going to say no. I think, right? You're not Lubavitch, right? You're say no. I'm not saying Lubavitch should say that, but if he were, at least he'd have an open path. He'd have an open path, you could say that. I was watching the highlights from the Kenneth Shluchim in America. So they were interviewing one of the Rabbanim. He goes, we see here a sign that the Rebbe... I forgot what he said. Just in Hebrew, Shareba Meodedotanu. And then he said Shahmeser Shalareba Meodedotanu. You know, he changed his formulation because I guess he realized he's being interviewed by the press. He said, the Rebbe is encouraging us. And he goes, the Rebbe's message is encouraging us. In any case, so Ari doesn't have that option. So the point is. We know that we're going to die, but we try to we live our lives ki'ilu without that consciousness. And so people try and plastic surgery, whatever can make them feel like they're not getting near death. Because by the way, if you dye your hair, you're not really 70 years old. You're 35 years old. Look! But even that doesn't work. And death is really the number one reason why people are never satisfied with what they have. It's why people are so tense about trying to get everything in so quickly. You know, there are a lot of people who are in a big rush to visit every country in the world. They have a record. Okay, I've been to China. And then they meet other, you know, world travelers. Okay, I've been to India. Okay, I've been on safari. I got a malaria shot. Oh. Choshev. I was talking to someone over Shabbos. He was, you know, being critical of these people who need to go everywhere all over the world, and he goes, you know, you can, he says to me, you can watch it on National Geographic. And I said to him, if you really want to feel like you were there, you could probably get a malaria shot. He goes, yeah. He goes, what's really the difference? Do you have to freeze? The point is, why are people in such a rush to get places? Could you imagine if you knew you would live forever? you wouldn't be in such a rush. People would take life much more slowly. By the way, people would probably be nicer to each other. If I know I'm going to have to be around you forever, you understand my point? For I can't afford not to have you as my friend. I'm seeing a lot of you, you know what I'm saying? We know, okay, fine, so, you know, he'll be dead, I'll be dead, who cares, right? Our whole mindset would be different. Let's continue with Pasuk Gimel. Im yolid ishmeya. A lot of older people, you talk to your parents, I don't know how old they are, you know, you have to be careful, because if they're like 40, it could have an implication, you know. But let's say your parents are 55. And so are you happy with the number of kids you had? I guess you couldn't ask your own parents that, because, you know. We want one less, you know, right? Many parents will say, we wish we had another child. You know, when we were that age, and, you know, it was hard, and we wish we had another child. But the truth is, had they had another child, do you think they would be happy? That's what he's saying here. Im yolidish meya. Meya is 100, right? Complete. Vishanim rabot yichya. If he lived many years. V'rav sheyu yemei shanav. No matter how many years he lives, nafsho lo tizba minatova. He won't be satisfied. And what makes him not satisfied is the fact that he loses it. Other Marishim, was he satisfied living 930 years? I assume in the end he goes, oh man, I wish I would have had a chance to go snappling, you know. Bungee. Saying there's always something else. And death means that you never really have control over the things you have in your life. Gam kfuralo atal, even his burial doesn't mean anything. Pasuk dalet. Ki behevel ba uvachoshech yolecho, uvachoshech shmo yuchuse. You come in darkness, you leave in darkness, you're forgotten. Gam shemesh lo ra'a ve lo yada nachat zel nezeh. Ve'ilu chaya elef shanim. If you lived 1,000 years, pa'amayim, twice. It's 2 times 1,000. Just, you know, 2,000, right? Twice. Betova lo ra'a, because halo el makom echad kol olech. Because in the end, we all go to the same place. Kol amal ha'adam lafihu. Therefore, all of man's work is for nothing. The gam nefesh lo timaleh, because we're never filled with satisfaction. Ki ma yoter lechacham min aksil. What does the chacham have more than the fool? Ma le'ani yodea la'aloch neged hachayim. What can man who's poor know about fighting the realities of life, which ends with death? Tov marei enayim alach nafesh. What we see is always more than we can reach. Ma she'aya kfar nikrashmo. What was already is already known. V'noda sherhu adam v'lo yuchal ladin im shetakif mimenu. And man can't struggle against what's stronger than him. Reminiscent of Pasuk Aleph, the Rabahi ala Adam. And what is stronger than man, as we've been saying throughout this parak? His own mortality. Ki yesh dvarim harbe marbim havel. There are so many things, as we've seen in Gimel Dalet Hei Vav, that make life seem meaningless, that make us wonder, ma yoter la Adam, what do we gain? Ki mi yodea ma tov la Adam. Who can really know what's good for man? B'chayim mispar yemei chayev lo. In his limited days of nothingness, v'yaseim katzel, that turn into a shadow. Asher mi yagid la Adam ma yeh acharav tachat hashamesh. He ends off Perek Vav with this important phrase, because it's the root of why we can't figure out what makes sense. And what is it? I want to translate the last phrase here. Asher mi yagid la Adam ma yeh acharav tachat hashamesh. Why can't we figure out what makes sense? Because we don't know what's after. Meaning, we die, we all die, and we don't know what comes after. Meaning, if we didn't die, we could judge based upon what we see in our world. But we do die. And death, as far as we see, neutralizes everything. Nullifies everything. So in order to figure out what makes sense, we need to see past the screen. Right? Like that Journey song about the two babies in the womb, right? Dear brother. Meaning, it's about two babies in the womb, and one of them is giving, you know, being born into the world, and he's like, oh my god, what's happening to you? Terrible, oh my god, oh my god. He's like terrified for his poor brother who's you know, going out there, doesn't know what to expect. He's saying, no, I hear it's a good world. They're debating between themselves, the two babies, right? I mean, we don't know what's on the other side. And of course, it's all a mashal for the nimsha, which is that death is rebirth into some other world. There's just one problem with that mashal. We know that birth is into this world. We don't know. Most of us are like the brother who's worried. So the point of the first part of Sefer Qehelet, what were the philosophies of Perek Gimel? The hedonist who says, there's a beautiful world, and God has it set, We're not meant to change it because we can't change it, and we should enjoy whatever we can. Perek Dalet, I'm summarizing, the response was, what do you mean we should enjoy whatever we can? Look around. It's a miserable world. People suffer. And that makes me not be able to enjoy myself. And even if I have, I'm always jealous of the guy who has more. I'm always working to get more. That's no life. The second philosophy responded in the beginning of Perek Dalet by saying, we should work as a team, a society, together. That makes us feel like we matter, that we make sense, we're working all together, we have the strength in numbers. What was the problem with that? We saw the end of Perek Dalet. It doesn't work because human beings are selfish. And we talked about the second kid who comes out of jail, South African and American coups. Right? There's always going to be people for the people who take advantage of the people. So we saw the third philosophy in Perek Hey was the Yirei Elokim. The Yirei Elokim is saying, you know, we really don't know. This is what we saw today. We really don't know. And we shouldn't make commitments so quickly. We should believe in God. We should do our work. And know that in the end, everything will be good. And what was the response to the end of Perek Hey? Really? Everything's going to be good? Well, what good? I don't see any good. Don't tell me just work and everything's going to be good. What am I, an ox? And ultimately, I know that I die. I know that death comes whenever God decides it's going to come or whenever nature decides it's going to come. It makes total nonsense out of everything we live, and therefore I have no solution. Now, the good news is that next week we'll see that whoever begins the second part of the book seems to think he has a solution. Because what were the questions asked at the end of Perek Vav? Mi yodea ma tov le'adam. Who knows what's good for man? Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Tov Shemi Shemin Tov. Tov Lalechat El Beit Evel. Tov Kas Mischok. Tov Lishmo Garat Chacham. So the beginning of Perek Zayin is responding, and he thinks he knows what's good. I think all of us are very eager to find out what he thinks could be good in a world that's nullified by death, right? But we'll have to wait till next week. Sorry, Charlie. You Charlie? Okay. Seder.